Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living Your Life by Design, a conversation of self, health, and wealth. And now, your host, certified career consultant, life coach, and author, Kathy Holloway Hill.
Good evening, good evening, good evening, everyone. I am Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And you are listening to the Living by Design radio show, and we are so excited to be with you today on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon here on the East Coast, or I should say in the Midwest. The weather is gorgeous, fall weather, and everything is lovely. Now, I first want to, again, apologize to my listeners for the technical difficulties we had last week. And I am also offering every single listener that tried to log into the show to just email me, and I will give you your choice of your audio MP3 download, whichever one that you choose from my C. Holloway Hill Learning Library. So email me at Kathy, that's with a C, Kathy at chholloweyhill.com. That's chholloweyhill.com. And we definitely will take care of you because we are committed to your life enhancement and improvement, and we don't want you to miss one single minute of being empowered. That's what we do. That's our passion, and we want to make sure that you receive that every single week. So email me, and we will make sure that we make up for that little fupa. All right, so hopefully everyone has had a fantastic week. And I had an extremely good week. I had a great weekend last week. We had a superb event up in Indianapolis, Indiana, very empowering, very enlightening. And for those of you who are listening that attended the Stewart and Associates Grand Gala and then the follow-up panel discussion on Saturday, Chit Chat and Chew, it was absolutely amazing. So I hope you were able to make that, and if not, you can go to Stewart and Associates or Stewart Speakers on Facebook and check out some of the photos. So it was wonderful. It was wonderful. We also have some more announcements that are going to be coming down the pike as far as Stewart and Associates. They are going to be expanding, and they're going to be offering some empowerment workshops, and we are so excited about that. So stay tuned, because we are getting ready to shake up the city of Indianapolis. Right, Tony?
Absolutely.
So you get ready, because we are coming and we are going to change your lives. Now let me just let all my listeners know, tonight we are so excited and we are so pumped and so enthusiastic about your life's changes that we have two guests. So for the first 30 minutes, we're going to bring a young lady by the name of, okay, I want to make sure that I'm pronouncing the name correctly, Nikki, and I think her last name is, okay, I'm sorry, it's Richeson or Richeson, one of the two, R-I-C-H-E-S-I-N. And she is the editor, I'm sorry, she's the author of a fantastic book about fathers and daughters. And the name of the book is What I Would Tell Her. And it's a great book. It's stories from different men that have written in talking about their experiences raising their daughters, some good, some bad. And I'm really excited about this topic because here on the Living by Design show, our purpose is to enhance your life through topics related to self-health and wealth. And we try to bring a variety of life-empowering topics. And this writer's book is very unusual. It's about a topic that we typically don't talk about, mother-daughter relationships and father-daughter relationships. And this is something that's extremely important in our community, and in our nation, because that relationship that a young woman has with her mother and her father early in life, it really does shape and make a difference in who she is. It also shapes and makes a difference in who that the adult individual is, both. So I'm really excited about having her on the show tonight. So we're going to bring her on for the first 30 minutes, and then after that we have another young lady named Karen Phillips who's going to come on, and I will talk about her a little bit more when we bring her on the line. So with that, I am going to go ahead and bring Nikki on the line, and I'm going to let her talk a little bit more about her book, and then we're going to go into the question and answer session. So, Nikki, can you hear me?
I can.
Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
Great. Hi, Kathy. I'm great. How are you?
I'm wonderful. I'm wonderful. And meet my co-host, Mr. Tony Lamont.
Hi, Tony.
Hi, Vivian. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for having me.
Yes, yes. Now, Nikki, I absolutely love the title of your book. It's What I Would Tell Her, 28 Devoted Dads on Bringing Up, Holding On To, and Letting Go of Their Daughters.
Yeah, that was the title for my first anthology, the first mother-daughter anthology, and they didn't like it for that book. They changed that title to Because I Love Her, but then they decided to go with this title for the father-daughter anthology, so I was happy about that because I've always loved that phrase. I think it's very telling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know what, Nikki, I absolutely hear a lot of people, a lot of my clients that come to me, actually, I just want to make sure that our listeners already know, but, you know, I think I mentioned to you in our email correspondence back and forth that our theme for this month is no more denial.
Right.
No more denial. And there's so many things that happen in our lives that cause us to sink into a place of denial. And instead of being in denial, we try to empower people to take ownership and take responsibility for what is ailing you, what has caused you to be in this toxic place, what is causing you to have the emotional issues that you currently have. Because the only way you can fix what is broken is to face it. You can't fix what you don't face. So I love this topic. I love this book. I love this title. Because
thank
this
you
is something
so
that
much.
We don't. Oh, absolutely. This is something we don't talk about very often on this show, is the relationship that young adults have with their fathers and their mothers, both. I'm in the process of heading up a program for the local public school system here in Louisville, Kentucky. And this is one of the things that we are really going to hit hard, is the relationship that it's for girls, a girls mentoring program. And we're going to hit this hard, the relationship that these young girls have with both their parents, mothers and fathers. There's a lot of single parenting going on, and there's a lot of relationships that are toxic, damaged, dysfunctional, you name it. And this really does affect how a child sees themselves and how they see the world.
I admire you for reaching out and doing that work, because I agree with you, it's important work. And as you said, you know, I think research has shown the power of a little girl's relationship with her father, because it affects her self-esteem and her confidence later in life and with other relationships with men. And, you know, just nurturing that bond is crucial. So, you know, I see it with my own husband and my daughter, because I realize their relationship is continually growing and evolving, but, you know, when she reaches puberty, she's really looking to him for a role model. You know, he's an important role model in her life. So,
right, absolutely. Now I want to talk a little bit about because I loved your book, and I noticed, unless I missed it, but I read the book and I pretty much got through all of it. Most of your stories, they have really good outcomes, and I'm happy about that.
Right.
But
yeah,
go ahead.
No, go ahead, please.
What I was going to say is, what I would like to ask you is, there, especially in the African American community, especially in some of the lower socioeconomic communities, African-American communities.
Right, right.
Sometimes the outcome, or most oftentimes the outcome, is not so pleasant. And sometimes when the child is very young, the parents may get a divorce, or, the father may be absent, and she may not have a healthy relationship with her father. There may be a stepfather in the picture.
Right. Right.
There may be even a live-in boyfriend that's not a stepfather per se,
sure,
but
sure.
Somebody. So let's talk about those situations where the young girl doesn't really have a good male role model and the father also is absent.
Well, I mean, that's a difficult situation to begin with. And, hopefully that young woman will find role models and mentors somewhere else in her life if she can't find that, within her own family. But for me, it was really important with this book to search for men with daughters of all different ages and different backgrounds to reveal a more complete picture of fatherhood, sort of from birth through adolescence all the way through to adulthood, because there are adult daughters in this book as well, as you know. And I learned a great deal from finally having the opportunity to work with men, because for years I've been working just with women exclusively on my anthologies. My first anthology was about women in their 30s. My second anthology was about women and their daughters and the relationships with their mothers and their daughters both. This one was exclusively men writing about their daughters. So I'm grateful to all the contributors for their commitment to this project. But, to answer your question, I mean, Trey Ellis, who's an African-American writer, playwright, professor at Columbia, he's an amazing writer in his own respect. He wrote about his relationship with his daughter, and he was a single father for many years. His wife left because she had mental illness and other issues. And, he's been an incredible role model for his daughter, taking that on. And now he's happily remarried with a new woman in his life, and she's kind of become the role model, the female role model for his daughter. But she's had a dad that's sort of gone way beyond expectations. He kind of became her mother in a sense, if you know what I mean.
Now let me ask you this, Nikki, because I actually have a couple family members that match this description. Let's talk about a scenario where the parents were both in the home, and there were several daughters, and the daughters, after I wouldn't say they were grown, but they were in their teens, in their mid-upper teens, and then a divorce took place. After the divorce takes place, the daughters pull away from the father.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they don't really want to have a relationship. They don't have a desire to have a relationship with him. And now he has changed because he's older. And when he was younger, he had some controlling ways, and was a very controlling individual. And now that he's older, and he's of course matured and learned and realized the importance of life, what the real true meaning and the important things in life. And so now that he's changed, the daughters still haven't fully had a chance to grasp where they are and how they can heal. So they're still on that healing path. He's already healed. He's ready to mend the relationship and have an improved relationship with them, but they don't want it.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you say to that?
I think that's a really difficult problem, but I think for all daughters during adolescence, I mean, I know for myself as well, it's fraught with problems because they're rebelling and, they're passionate and they're going through so much, and they're also really focused on themselves usually, and they don't have the maturity to look sort of outward. But I would say that I found, at least in the essays in this collection, the men had to kind of learn to respect their daughters and trust them and love them enough to make their own decisions in a way. That's a difficult time because there's all this fear of their development sexually. So I think in most regards, men have a tendency to overprotect their daughters, as you said, to control and try to keep them protected and safe in the world. But I found, at least in the essays that I read and I responded to, that they have to let go a little bit too, and they have to trust and pay attention to their daughters in a way Do you know what I mean?
Yes, I do. You know, that's actually some of the advice that I actually gave, you know, the ones who I had an opportunity to be able to give some insight about that, because my advice was that all of these women are grown now. They are grown. They are making their choices. I think they're all intelligent enough to know the choices that they're making. Choices have consequences. And he has to, as you stated, trust. He has to have enough trust. He has to have enough security within himself. But because I think a lot of what's going on within him is guilt and regret and those types of emotions that he didn't do it right.
Right, and I think, you know, all dads experience those feelings of guilt and fear and doubt, but there is also so much joy to focus on, you know what I mean? And you can be a supportive, engaged father today. You just have to look at that and how satisfying that can be. And again, pay attention to your relationship with your daughter. Ask questions. Be a part of their life, even when they're pushing you away.
Mm-hmm. Now, and I'm going to expand it. Go ahead, Tony.
Well, I just wanted to ask Nikki. Here's one of the questions I have from a dynamic of fatherhood, and I don't know in the essays how many were older fathers, and I know you said you had some grown children and things like that, but I was just wondering if you had any essays that dealt with how things might have been years ago, because it seems as though father and daughter relationships have dramatically changed to some degree when it comes to how fathers are interacting with their daughters nowadays. I know fathers back then, because a lot of fathers were blue-collar workers or, you know, they worked a certain way, acted a certain way. Their relationship with their daughters were a little strained, a little different. You didn't see the same kind of dynamic, whereas now there seems to be some more interaction, or there seems to be an opportunity for more interaction to some degree with their daughters. Did you get any of that in the essays? Did you see any of those dynamics?
I think that's a really good point, because I did have quite a few older fathers and also grandfathers. But, you know, I think generations ago, fathers could kind of hide behind their parental role as a caregiver and be the sole breadwinner, so they're not the feelings of inadequacy resulted because they weren't doing, you know, they weren't putting kids to bed or, they were going to work, as you said. So today they're expected to do both, and it's kind of a tough balancing act because nurturing and caregiving usually comes quite naturally to a woman, but for men it can be a bit more of a challenge, you know. I think it's difficult for them, and it doesn't come as naturally, as I said. So I was thinking of one essay in particular when you were talking. There was a man named Robert Balsh who wrote about having a child quite young, and then he divorced his wife, and she raised the child. And then later, his daughter comes to him and wants to meet him face-to-face. She's never met him, and he writes this really long letter to her telling her how much he loves her and wants to know her, because he also remarried and had two other children with another wife. And so it's a beautiful story of their reconciliation and how they both forgave each other. She had to forgive him for giving her up so young when he wasn't ready, and he wasn't ready to be a father. And, you know, now they've formed this really beautiful family all together. It's a very inspirational story.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
And you know, another point I wanted to make, too, is that sometimes what I see, the dynamic that I have observed in, you know, some of my clients, because I coach and counsel and mentor a lot of young women who have this issue with, you know, either their father was absent or they had a toxic relationship with them or he wasn't interested or he was too controlling or dysfunctional, he was an alcoholic, or first one thing that I've heard it all. And I have a couple of comments. My first thing is I agree with what you said about the nurturing and caregiving. I do know that it's not just a natural innate instinct for men. That's the first thing. I mean, if the father is in the home and he's just not nurturing and caregiving, that's just kind of, you know, the way men back in the late 60s and 70s were raised to be. And I think once a young woman becomes an adult and once she is, you know, past 25, that she has to, you know, understand that she's making her own choices and she is responsible for whatever may have been dysfunctional in her childhood, and it's now up to her to fix that.
I think you're so right, too. I mean, I see that with young women all the time.
It's
not a abandoned, you know, a lot of them have abandonment issues. You know, it may or may not be because of their father. It may be of relationships with other men, boyfriends. But learning to take care of themselves and not look to men to complete them, being okay on their own, you know, it's unfortunate to see women with those issues, because then I think they find it, especially in their early 20s, maybe when they're still looking for their identity, trying to find out who they are and what they want from life. Oftentimes I think they're looking to men to sort of complete them in that way. And so to be able to focus on themselves instead, I think, is the answer, is the key to being in a healthy relationship later on. So
right, and this is one of the reasons I wanted to have this topic for my theme of No More Denial, because I do think this does play into the issue of being in denial, because if you continue to use the and I hate to say the word excuse, but that's kind of what it is, if you continue to fall on that excuse that, well, I came from a dysfunctional family and I didn't know my father, and that's why I have the issues I have today, you'll never heal.
Right, because you're blaming others for your problem. Yeah,
right.
Sure. Absolutely,
right.
No. I mean, oh, man, I just finished editing this new book. It's coming out in June. It's called Crush, 26 Real Life Tales of First Love, and it's all these stories of heartbreak, and I see so much of my young self in them. You know, I see how I struggled in love and relationships and finally learned how to love myself and not, you know, as you said, there's no more denial, so you're not... You're an adult. You're taking care of yourself. You're not blaming other people for your shortcomings.
Right, right. And then on the other end of the spectrum, the father, you know, like I said, I know some individuals, you know, some family members and friends and individuals who struggle with their own emotions because of, in their opinion, they didn't do it right. And they have regrets, and they don't like the fact of the type of relationship they have with their daughters, and maybe their daughters aren't where they wanted to be. So they just totally allow the worry and the guilt and the disappointment and the sadness and all of that stuff to just eat away at them. Mm-hmm. And I try to tell them the best thing you can do for your daughter is to be a role model. If you want her to be a healthy, functional individual, then you be a healthy, functional individual.
Yeah. I mean, as you can say, you have to show them, right? You have to show them.
Yeah, you've got to lead by example. You've got to show her that you have your life together. If she sees you all the time falling apart, she sees your life is just a total mess, then she's
going to... Then that's what she's going to emulate, absolutely.
Remain.
Yeah.
She's going to remain there.
Right.
Yeah, if you know she's struggling with trying to raise up out of her dysfunctional beliefs and her dysfunctional issues, then why throw more of that in her face when she's around you and she sees you always worrying and stressing and pulling your hair out, and every time she sees you, you have 12 more gray hairs?
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle, really. I mean, I think one of the things that's so beautiful about this anthology is that the essays are really full of these quiet moments, kind of preserved like time capsules or something, for the daughters to remember, because there are quite a few number of young fathers talking about that really sweet time in their lives with their daughters when they're little and they're growing and they're learning so much and they're cherishing these moments. But, you know, as parents, we all know that dailiness of just caring for a child and all that entails, but also honoring those small moments that can kind of transform your life. So, because it goes by really fast, I'm finding. So
it does.
Yeah.
And I have to admit, I mean, I can be transparent. I always share my own special or particular story whenever I have a show about a specific topic. And I had both parents in the home growing up. My father worked, my mother stayed at home. But there was a lot of dysfunction, a lot of dysfunction. And a lot of that dysfunction carried into my adulthood. And I had to come to terms with that, and I had to, you know, face that and fix those issues, and I did. I fixed. I mean, first off, I want everyone to know that success is not a destination. It's a journey. Mm-hmm. You know, you always continue to go and grow, always. So everything that I experienced in my childhood from a dysfunctional perspective, I constantly strive to be better and better and better. I am nowhere where I used to be. And I pray and I ask God that I hope that I'm nowhere close to where I'm going to be. Because I strive every day to be better and better and better and better.
And it sounds like you're really honest with yourself, too, you know.
I
think that's so important.
And I know exactly what my issues are. Yes.
Yeah. I mean, I think.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say that honesty, that trusting your gut, listening to yourself, not ignoring when something's bothering you, you know, all of that, so it's so crucial to being enlightened and knowing what your issues are. So, you know, I admire you for pushing yourself that way.
Well, I appreciate that. And I just want to be an example. And that's why I think being an example is so important, because you can tell people and you can teach and teach and teach and teach, but then when you go home and you do the total opposite of what you're teaching, that gets your protégés nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
My pastor said something very profound in church this past Sunday, and I absolutely loved it. I'm a very spiritual person. And he said, it doesn't matter what your situation is. You cannot nurse it or rehearse it. You have to disperse it because God will reverse it.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that wonderful?
Yeah, that's profound. That's really profound.
I loved it. Absolutely love it. And he's so right. You can't nurse it and keep licking your wounds and rehearse it and keep, you know, feeling and experiencing the same things over and over. Those same emotions keep coming up and you continue to let it keep you in the same spot, rehearsing it over and over and over. Let it go. Disperse it. And God will reverse the situation and heal your life.
Yeah, I think there's a real bravery in that too, you know, being willing to do that, to face your fears, to go there, it's hard. It's hard. Like you said, it's a journey. We're all on this journey and we're all doing the best we can. So
that's right. That's right. We certainly are. And Nikki, I want to make sure that our listeners have your contact information, your website information, so that they can contact you. As I stated, as you know, we have such a full show tonight. We have another guest that's going to be coming on here shortly. So let's go ahead and get
you having
your...
me.
Oh, I appreciate you being on. Let's
Thank
get
you
out
so
your
much.
Website so that
yeah,
you can check out some of your...
Sure, it's NikkiRichardson.com. That's NikkiRichardson.com. And all my anthologies are on there, except the one that's coming out in June. It's called Crush, and it's about first love. It's a really fun, exciting collection with a lot of wonderful writers, so I'm really excited about that as well. But it's been a pleasure talking to you. Thank you for having me.
And what's the name of it again?
It's called Crush, 26 Real-Life Tales of First Love. So these are stories about first love from adolescence into adulthood. Some of the writers are Jacqueline Michard, Rebecca Walker, Ann Hood, Steve Allman, and you know I've been lucky to work with some amazing authors, so I'm really excited about this book too.
Oh, that is wonderful. That is wonderful. Well, I think you are absolutely doing fabulous work.
Thank
this
you so much.
This is a topic
you
that
too.
So many people need to hear. Oh, thank you very much, Nikki. I love what I do, and, you know, I talk a lot about, and I'm just going to keep going until my other guest comes on
okay.
in my queue here, on hold. I don't see her on hold yet.
Okay.
But I absolutely love my work. I love my work, and I just feel so fulfilled when I have a chance to interact with people like you who are diligent and committed to their work, and you're committed to change and committed to life improvement and enhancement, because there's so much negative media out there. There's so much negative media, and we just have to balance it with positive
right.
media shows like
and
this.
And there's so much to be grateful for, too. There's so much beauty in the world, and there's so much to be happy and joyful about as well. So it's wonderful that you're a bright light shining out there for us.
Yeah, Well, thank you so much. And my listeners, I know my listeners appreciate it because I always post my topic ahead of time. And, you know, they had written in saying that they couldn't wait to hear what you had to say about this topic because a lot of middle-aged women are still struggling with the relationships they had with their fathers. And so, you know, if middle-aged women are struggling, you know the women in their 20s are struggling. So
that's the truth. I felt like this was kind of a love letter to my dad to say thanks for all he's done for me, but also maybe to make up for those years, my teenage years, when we were kind of at each other's, you know, we were at odds. So it's been great to be able to offer that to him as kind of a thank you.
That's great. And you know, in my childhood, my mother was actually the disciplinarian, and she was extremely strict, very controlling, and my father was very easygoing. He was such a lighthearted individual. And I got a lot from both of them. I actually acquired a lot of traits and skills and dysfunction, you know, a little bit of everything from both of them. And you know, I'm happy about that. I wouldn't change a thing because, as I stated, it's a journey. And I learned so much. I learned so much.
I'm a big softie with my daughter, but I'm trying to learn to be more of a disciplinarian and try to give her, because she needs boundaries. So I'm working on that every day. It's hard.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I know all about boundaries.
Well, thank you so much, Kathy. It's been a pleasure.
Well, thank you, too, Nikki. I really appreciate you coming and spending this time with us, and we will definitely keep you in our prayers, and we
thank
will have
you
back on the show.
Amen. Take good care. God
yes,
bless you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
God bless you, too. Good night. Now, Tony, are you still there?
Oh, yeah, I'm still here.
Oh, okay. I really enjoyed that. I really enjoyed that. Now, we're waiting for our... We're waiting for our second guest to come on the line. Her name is Karen Phillips, and she is actually a change, a navigator for change. So that will be very interesting because that's one of the things that we really try to empower on this show is change, because we both know that one of the most difficult things that we will ever have to accomplish in this life is to change ourselves, change how we think, change out of our comfort zone, and all those things. So I'm really excited about bringing her on the line when she comes. So, you know, we will just continue to talk about some of the topics we're going to have coming up over the next few weeks while we're waiting on Karen, unless you have some announcements, Tony.
No, I don't have any announcements, so I'm looking forward to hearing.
You're kind of breaking up a little bit. Can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now. Yes, I can hear you. You were breaking up there for a minute, so I wasn't sure. But, so I'm going to go ahead and, you know, I'm not sure if Karen got held up, but I am going to just go ahead and talk a little bit about change and navigating through change. Because that is something that a lot of us struggle with. One of the things that I tell a lot of people in my workshops is that it doesn't matter what your goal is in life, whether you're trying to get your PhD or whether you're trying to pass the bar exam or whether you're trying to become an MD and go through medical school, nothing is going to be harder than changing who you are. That is the hardest thing that anyone will ever have to accomplish in life, changing who you are. Especially the older we are, the harder it is, because once our minds are set and once we are where we are in our lives, in our mindset, in our beliefs, in our behaviors, in our actions, in our routine, in our rut, it's very, 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 very difficult to navigate yourself out of that into a different mindset, into improving and changing who you are. So this is something that I truly, truly want to try to get across to my listeners, that change is critical. You can't have change unless you do change. And when I say do change, I'm talking about yourself. And it all starts in the mind. It all starts in the mind. It all starts with your mindset. It all starts with your beliefs. You, just like I have said in the past several workshops I've conducted, you have to figure out where did your beliefs come from. And you can't be, what's the word I'm looking for? You can't be shy about it. You can't be shy about it. You can't be in denial, which is what the theme is about. You can't be afraid to accept and realize where you are, because you have to face it so you can fix it. So if you say, "Well, I'm all right. I mean, I'm doing okay. I don't really have any issues. I don't have any concerns. I'm good," then you'll never be able to fix the problem. So that's what I want to make sure that I get across to my listeners, that, you know, that they do understand that the change is inevitable. It has to happen before your life can grow. I know Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that, and I can't remember exactly which guest it was, but one thing that they did say when they were talking about change, because we were discussing change and how important change is in the life, in our lives, as we grow older, as we grow better, as we grow. And they substituted the word change for growth. And that's the one thing that people don't really understand. That's really what change is. Change is an opportunity for growth. Change is an opportunity for you to take what you knew and utilize it for what you can be, and the things that you don't know, you can step closer to those things. And so it's always one step closer to being something better than you were, because you can take the things you've gone through and use them, and then learn new things and add them on top of what you've already learned. So change is about growth. Change is about becoming a bigger, better, and a different you. And I think the challenge with most people is they become complacent with where they are. But I've always said that, you know, the bottom line when it comes to living is, if you ever think that you're going to stop learning, then you might as well die, because the truth about life is it's about learning and growing, and that growth is changing. And every day there's an opportunity for you to grow something within yourself. And I think more people, once they take the time to realize that life is going to be a lot better for them.
Well, you know, Tony, actually, death is a goal, because if you're not trying to enhance your life and improve and move toward changing or growing, then your goal by default is death, because that's what happens. And one of the things I try to post a positive quote or a positive thought for the day on my blog. And I always say that, you know, whatever plants, flowers, everything that has life, it's growing daily. And if it doesn't grow, it withers away and dies. So either you're growing or you're withering, one of the two. So if you're not growing and you're staying stuck in your rut and you're staying in that same spot that you've always been in and you're doing the same things you've always done, the same mindset you've always had, you're withering. That's what's happening. You're withering. You're not enjoying life as God wants us to enjoy life. I mean, the Bible tells us exactly how to live. It's a roadmap for exactly how we should be living our lives. And that's why I love this theme of no more denial, because I hear so many clients, I hear so many people, Tony, say, "Well, I mean, I will do this when. I will do it when this happens, or I will do it when that happens, or I could do it if this or if that." You know, it's always conditional, and it shouldn't be conditional. It shouldn't be conditional. I mean, life is a gift. Life is a gift, and we need to understand that. I mean, we're not here. We don't have a sense of entitlement to be here. It's a gift that we're here. And we have to savor and appreciate every single day that we spend on this planet One of the comments that was made last weekend at the event was the gentleman that held the event. One of the comments he made is that service, or let me see how did he say it. Service is the rent that we pay to be on this planet, and I really like that. Service is the rent that we pay to be on this planet, and that's why I love what I do. It's giving service and giving my knowledge to other people. I think I see my guest on the line. I am going to try to see if I can open the line and bring Karen Phillips on.
Yay.
Karen, I hope you can hear me. Can you hear me?
I can hear you. I've been listening to you for quite a little few minutes here. I was listening
to
you.
Really?
Yes, I've been online. I heard the last guest sign off, and I'm excited to be online with you guys. How are you?
Well, I am excited to have you here, and I apologize you came a little bit late, but you came anyway. That's the great thing.
Oh, well, hey, I'm here. I heard the last guest sign off, so whatever it is, I'm here, and I do agree with everything you and Tony were saying. We are
absolutely
here.
Absolutely, and I know you are.
It's a gift.
You are the lady of navigation. I know that's what you're called. Just you are the navigator of change, and I love that. I absolutely love that. And can I talk a little bit about your latest book? Because I know you have a couple of books that you've written, right?
I do. I have chapters within in an anthology collection. I'm in
mm-hmm.
a book called Discover Your Inner Strength, and it's cutting-edge growth strategies from some of the industry's leading experts. In the book is Brian Tracy. I'm sure your listeners have heard of him, or Ken
mm-hmm.
Blanchard, Stephen Covey, and myself, and there's probably about 15, 20 other authors in there. And we each have a
mm-hmm.
chapter. And mine happens to be about recognizing your rainbows. And in listening to you and Tony speak, it's like we are all on the same wavelength here. Because, you know, it's not so much of what we do. It's what we do for others that gives us the payback. And, you know, I believe in the saying by Vivian Green that said, life's not about waiting for the storms to pass. It's about learning to dance in the rain.
Mm.
And I'm going to tell you, I think every one of your listeners out there, they've dealt with adversity in their lives at one time or another. I mean, if they haven't, are they human? We all have adversity at one time or another. But I think it's how we look at that adversity and what we do with it. How we say, wow, is that quote problem going to power me, or, you know, take the power from me, or am I going to become empowered by that problem? And I've had to do that in my own life. So I'm telling you from experience what I say to your listeners. I'm speaking from the heart, and I didn't do it alone. I mean, the changes that I've made and the improvements that I've seen in my life, it's from a higher power, and my higher power happens to be God, and I appreciate everything that I've learned, and I'm teaching others as I go along. So,
yeah, I love that. Did you happen to be on the line when I shared with the previous guest what my pastor said last Sunday?
I heard what you said to Tony about when you were at the conference. So I didn't
hear what the pastor said
last week.
I think this bears repeating because I tell you, I'm sorry, Tony. I know you heard it once, but I absolutely loved it. My pastor said that, and because he talked about adversity, you know, there's something here that someone's dealing with, you know, and he talked about how there's a situation that is that's really weighing you down, and he talked about how we must learn how not to nurse it and rehearse it. You know, nurse it means to lick your wounds, rehearse it, keep doing it over and over and over, because we need to disperse it, because God will reverse it.
Wow. That is what
I absolutely – I loved it. I loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I was like, ooh, that's very powerful. And I love rhymes anyway.
But, you know, let me just share, if I can, with you a
sure.
little bit about me. Is that okay?
Absolutely.
Do you mind?
Not at all. That's what you're
okay.
here for.
27 years ago, I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis. You know, I was young at the time. I was 26. And they told me I had that, and I had two small children. I didn't have time to have that. And as I was very blessed that I had the relapsing remitting form, very blessed for a number of years, I was able to keep my job. I was a school principal, took care of, you know, 103 employees at a time and 2,300 students in a building. So, I mean, I had a lot of responsibility. Went through my days, and I praised God every day for what I had. But about 4 years ago, I went down to the Mayo Clinic just to get an update to see how I was doing, and they told me I was secondary progressive in that stage of the disease. And I walked out, and I said to my husband, honey, do you think I'm the same person I was when I walked in? And he said, yes. And I said, well, then that's the way it's going to be. I wasn't going to let the words that they said and the new label that they gave me define me. They were talking that the only treatments they had for me would be chemotherapy over 3 years. And, you know, I went through, well, what are my odds of, you know, side effects? And we talked all about that. And I said, you know what? I'm from Las Vegas. Those odds that you're giving me of 1 in 800 or 1 in 1,000 of developing cancer, I don't have cancer now. I have multiple sclerosis. I think I'll keep my odds the way I have it. I'm from Vegas. I don't play slots because, you know, I know what the odds are. And no. So I chose to do both Western and Eastern medicine and combine them and watch nutrition and what I was putting into my body, treat my body more as a temple. And I started feeling so much better, so much better, that people started asking me, what is it that you're doing? And so I came up with what I developed, calling the 7 keys to success. And, you know, it goes for anything. It doesn't go for a disease. It can go for a problem in a marriage. It can go for financial situations. It can cover if you're a parent and you're raising children and you're having problems with children and you're toying with, oh, heavens, the teenage years, you know? And I'd kind of like to share those with you. Do we have time?
Sure.
Okay. So if your listeners wish to write anything down, they could. And what it is, it's the keys to success. So if on a sheet of paper they spelled out the word success going down the sheet of the paper, so it'd be an
S. Which I'm doing right now.
Oh, you're good. You're good, Kathy. S, then a U, C, C, E, S, S. I'll tell you what I've put with it. And you know what? People can develop their own that they wish to place with it, but I'll tell you my definitions behind that, and they work for me.
Okay.
And the first one, just to shorten it, I say the first S is spiritual solace. Start each day with spiritual solace. And give thanks and blessings to everything that you have in your life. You know, some possibilities might be, some people might want to do like I do and read a devotional or the word. Maybe people are into journal writing and they want to write down their private thoughts or even take time to meditate their day. But all I know is if you made a list, if you and I, Kathy, if we made a list of all the things that are right in our life or that are wrong in our life, I think we're going to find out that everything's pretty good. You know, we'll be amazed, a huge difference that you feel every day. You know, I know our problems will not change instantly, and they don't, but it's amazing how our perspective of our problems can change.
Mm-hmm.
So my first S is start each day with spiritual solace. Then we come to the U, and it's unlock the fullness of gratitude in your life. So unlock gratitude. Unlock gratitude. And to me, it's a way of bringing inner peace where you can, how do I say it, turn darkness into light.
Right.
You can turn a house into a home that way. And gratitude, it's just your readiness to show appreciation and the act of returning kindness. You can even turn with gratitude, don't you think, your enemies into friends? You know, and I'm sure you've heard, haven't we all heard that saying before? Have an attitude of gratitude?
Yes. Yes.
And so when we put those together, you're starting to see that we're getting a basis of positive change, positive thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
The first C that I have is commit to faith. Now, this would include deeply believing in oneself and a much higher power. And as I said earlier, my higher power happens to be God. And faith can inspire faith. And when you have faith and you believe, you absolutely believe that change is possible, you can envision endless possibilities. And then these possibilities, they truly can become realities. But you have to believe. You have to believe.
Right. So true.
The second C I have is circumstances do not define you. Circumstances do not define you. But the flip of that is that your actions and attitudes sure can. You know,
right.
So often people will say, well, I have this, so I can't do that. But you know what? You can find other ways to accomplish it. Like, if I'm having difficulty walking one day, it doesn't mean that I can never go someplace. It might mean that I might have to do something slower, or I might have to do it in a different way. And I kind of laugh at when I tell my husband, hey, I'm going to run to the store, because, A, I don't run anymore, and going to the store might take a little bit longer. But I still go to the store.
Mm-hmm.
So circumstances are not going to define you, and you're not a bad situation, or you're not a person of bad health, and whatever it is, your character is going to shine through your circumstances regardless of your health, regardless of about the money you have. It's not about that. It's not about the type of car you have. You know, it's not about where you live. Your character will shine through all those circumstances, and you just need to change the way you look at things and develop that positive attitude. And, you know, it's another thing that we've all heard. You need to learn to walk the talk. You need to believe in what you're saying and know that the circumstances don't define you and that communication is the key there. And that brings us to the letter E. So on E, everything is with a purpose. Everything is with a purpose. I believe, and I tell people that I talk to and that I coach, that, you know, things in your life happen for a reason, and we might not know what it is right now, and we might not know tomorrow.
Like it.
Pardon me?
And we may not like what it is.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's probably our hardest, don't you, Kathy, when you're talking
yes.
to people? I mean, and ourselves, too. Or we've envisioned what we think the end should be of how the situation should have worked out, and it didn't. And so once we come accustomed to that everything has a purpose, and we agree with that we're not the ones writing in that book what the end result is going to be, we have to just believe in the results and know that everything is going to be fine and know that it's all small stuff and that we don't need to sweat that small stuff.
That's right.
And then we have two more S's. And so the first S there is save your energy and emotions. And I use that one so much because every day it's so easy to be wound up in what's taking place. And we can get our emotions all going, and it sends us off in one direction, and we forget what we're really after. You know, you can't see the forest because of the trees. And our emotions get the best of us. So I figure, and I tell my folks, that you don't have time for those things. You know, it sounds very basic, but, you know, anger, jealousy, self-pride, those things are needlessly, they consume us.
Mm-hmm.
They just consume us all needlessly. And that we need to practice the forgiveness and appreciation and being a good, strong person. And save that energy for what really matters when you need it. Trust me, there's times that you need to cry. There's times that you absolutely need to laugh, and I believe in laughter every day.
I believe that.
But, you know, I can even remember when my kids would be young and they were coming in, tattling on each other, and surely I'm not the only one that has children that ever did that. I don't know if you have.
Yeah.
Do you have children? Or?
Well, I have one.
Okay, well, you know, were they ever playing with a playmate outside and came in and said, Mom, Johnny just did this.
Yes,
and they started to cry?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I used to tell my children when they'd do that, I'd say, are those tears? And they'd say, yes. I said, what if you used up all of your tears now, and then when you really needed them, you didn't have any?
Mm-hmm.
And they stopped, and they'd say, what do you mean? I said, what if you use up all your tears now, and then you absolutely, something bad happens, and you really have to cry, and you're out of tears? Okay, Mom.
That's a good point.
And so,
and
that,
that could also go toward worry in general. I mean, if you're going to worry about everything, small stuff, medium stuff, big stuff, what are you going to do when you really do need to worry? Are you going to just keel over and die?
Absolutely. And so
that's,
it comes back,
point.
That is the small stuff. So I raised my small children with that. They'd look at me when they'd come and they'd start to cry. I'm going, is this the end? Is this really what we're going to use the tears for? No. All right, then just let's talk. What's going on? My last S, because I see that we're getting short on time, is stay silent and still. Stay silent and still. And I think we all have that little inner voice that will do something, and then we have that voice inside of us that talks to us. And we say, I wonder. So I think stay silent and still is, we do have to listen to what that voice is saying, and we must be open to changes. And it's kind of like what we talked about and you just said, Kathy, that things might not be always things might not always be going the way we think they should. But that doesn't mean that they're out of alignment with the big picture in life.
Exactly.
You know, sometimes changes in outcomes, they're very small or unplanned. But in time, we'll recognize their significance. And, you know,
and if people
stay
could
silent,
just know that silence is so huge, Karen. It is so huge because we're so busy with a mind full of thoughts that, you know, it's like we are afraid of silence. We're afraid to be still. That's when God speaks to us. We need to meditate to connect to our higher power so that we can get those answers. The answers are always there. They're always there inside of us, but we can't get them because we're too busy worrying about traffic, worrying about family members, worrying about work, worrying about uncontrollable things in our lives.
Kathy,
so we miss the message about
100%.
Yeah,
100%.
And we missed the message.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Have you ever been stuck in a grocery line? I mean, I know in Las Vegas, where I live, grocery lines sometimes can be really long. Or I'll change lines, you know, and I'm thinking this is going to be the faster line.
Me too.
I have got the thing now that when I get in a line, I praise God. And I say, God, thank you for providing me this time to be calm and have conversation with you. So I now use that time that I have to wait in line as a praise for God saying, all right, you needed to relax a moment, so you're going to take 4 minutes out of your life. What do you want to say? And it's like, now I don't mind the lines any longer. It's like, this is cool. I can handle this.
That's
but
right.
It's kind of something,
that's,
you know,
so right.
We have it in traffic. We have it all the time.
And start. We're coming up on our last minute, Karen, so go ahead and give your website. I want to make sure our listeners get that.
Absolutely, and I thank you for it. My name is Karen Phillips, but the website is Karen, K-A-R-E-N, at empoweredpotential.com, empoweredpotential.com, Karen at empoweredpotential.com. And, Kathy, you told me you have listeners from all over the world. I'm going to tell you, I've never had email outside of the United States. You don't know how jazzed I would be to see how many emails I could get from a listener that just said they heard our conversation on your website.
Well, you might just get that. You might just get that.
I would be so jazzed.
Karen.
That would be like the
coolest
thing.
I really appreciate you coming this evening. We are coming up on our last 30 seconds, and I'm just going to end this, and I hope you all got something great out of this. I also wanted to add real quickly that if it's time for you to get a physical exam, please go in, get your physical health checked, because sometimes there are physical things going on with you that could totally be affecting your emotions and your mental health. So please, 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 please do that. We appreciate you guys joining us tonight. We're going to sign off for now. I'm Kathy Holloway Hill.
And I'm Tony Lamont.
And we will see you this time next week. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Tony.
I know you're going to dig this.
Wrangle in waters, right or wrong, I do not know. I'm curious, where were all these ethics about 8 years ago? Washington has always been quid pro quo. You scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, no one has to know. It's kind of funny now they want to get ethical. If you want to have morals, I know a great way to keep score. Go back and look at some of those people that you chose to ignore. Obesity rates are getting higher with blacks leading the pack. Call it